Dun, 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 dun.
Hello.
Oh, I have a sleepy buddy. Sorry.
And welcome to Stasis Pod, the Transformers Cyberverse podcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Jen.
And I live my life a quarter mile at a time, family. I'm David.
That's right. Charlie Sheen and Natasha Kinski in Terminal Velocity. Has anybody seen the movie Terminal Velocity?
I don't think so.
No, I haven't.
Unless I saw it back in the 90s.
Well, for starters, it was one of two skydiving-themed action movies released in 1994.
The other was Point Break?
Point Break is a couple years earlier. The other one was Drop Zone.
Oh, never heard of
that's
that.
That's with Wesley Snipes and Gary Busey.
What?
Yeah, Drop Zone.
Sure, that sounds like a thing.
Gary Busey is like a rogue government agent who recruits a team of skydivers to perform like a heist.
Like you do, just normal things.
That sounds like you're just making this up as you go, but apparently it is real?
That's a real movie. Huh.
I missed a Wesley Snipes movie.
Meanwhile, yeah, this is about Charlie Sheen, who gets involved with like a plot involving Natasha Kinski and a long before the Sopranos, James Gandolfini.
Hmm.
Uh-huh.
That it also involves skydiving.
Okay, cool. So skydiving was way more popular in the 90s.
Feel like it got a lot of attention in the 90s.
I mean, I think part of it was that Point Break was like 91, and that was a big hit.
Yeah.
And it has that big skydiving scene. So they were like, well, why don't we make the whole movie out of the skydiving scene?
And then I guess wrapping up the end of that entire genre was Power Rangers Turbo, the movie where they started skydiving in the beginning of that movie. Or was that in the first Power Rangers movie?
No, that's the first Power Rangers movie where they're skydiving at the beginning of that movie.
When was the first one?
That was like 95, so the year after this.
Ah.
Maybe 96. But no, 95, definitely.
Anyway, nothing to do with skydiving.
This episode unfortunately doesn't have anything to do with that, which is, this could definitely use some skydiving or something. Because this is one of the weirdest episodes of Transformers ever made.
The mood whiplash is intense.
Yes, I mean, if you wrote down like a couple sentences to describe this episode, it wouldn't sound bad, but the execution is very... Why?
This is 100% something you can't do in 11 minutes, unless you're going to get a lot more serious with it, which they're not.
Yeah, no.
No. Just, oh my god, the very, very end, the just, like, last 3 seconds is just, like...
Yeah, it's, like, very what the fuck. Well, the entire episode is kind of like that. Like, it starts with an A plot, and then a B plot just crashes into it and derails...
Yeah.
What would have been a dumb A plot, but the B plot is like, why? Is it something that's going to come up in the future?
No.
Oh. No. Then what the fuck is this?
This never comes up again.
Then this episode is very confusing. Anyway, let's start it.
So yeah, this first aired in the U.S. October 20th, 2018, written by Gavin Hynight, who is also the guy who was responsible for a lot of the Transformers War for Cybertron trilogy.
Oh no.
Indeed.
Oh no.
And did do a couple episodes of Earthspark.
First season or second season?
Weirdly, one in the first, one in the second.
Okay, huh. Okay.
And yeah, we'll do a lot of Cyberverse going forward.
Okay.
Also wrote for Star Wars Resistance, that cartoon that...
Resistance?
I'm not sure anybody... That's not Rebels. It's the one that takes place in, like, the sequel trilogy timeline.
That's the, like, younger pitched one, right?
Not the, like, younger pitched one. I think this is pitched like,
well,
the same
audience.
Well, no,
not Young Jedi Adventures, which is for literal, like, preschool children, but...
Yeah, I assume this is pitched at, like, the same sort of Clone Wars, Rebels type audience.
Is that the one about the racing spaceships?
Ah, that's the one.
Okay, yeah, I saw, like, an episode and was like, eh. Ship designs are neat. Mm-hmm. Didn't kind of like the aesthetic of the rest of the show.
Anyway, so this one involves Velocitron, the racing planet.
The Hot Wheels planet.
Yes, and I will say that at the very least, this is more visually interesting than what they did on Cybertron.
Yeah, it's pretty good looking. It's pretty
good looking. I mean, that was just endless flat roads through the barren wastelands.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least this has some loop de loops and like a hub city that leads off.
Yeah.
It does feel a little bit like a Hot Wheels track.
Yes.
Not a lot of variety, but you're not going to get that in 10 minutes of episode, anyway.
No, especially with the other plot they've got to go with here.
Yeah.
Not with the budget that they have for models.
Also that. So Bumblebee, he decides to try and dig into his own memories to see if he can figure out what's going on. So he remembers that one day he went to Velocitron, the Fast and Furious planet, where we may or may not be racing for pink slips here. Possibly also, if things had gone differently, we maybe would have taken on a gang that is stealing whatever the Cybertronian equivalent of VCR-DVD player combos are.
I mean, none of this really works, because like, you can't have pink slips for cars, since you are your car. And what is the equivalent of, I guess, some electronic parts you could
or
sell?
Maybe like your parts, like if you've got like racing add-ons like spoilers or like whatever the Transformers equivalent of hitting the nitrous is.
Also, it is probably worth noting that Bumblebee is like, I'm just gonna say injecting and use the IDW Nemo surgery terminology, but he's doing this unsupervised, which is part of how he ends up in some pretty dark parts of his memories.
This is why Leonardo DiCaprio had like a whole crew in Inception. You can't just go in there on your own.
No, you really want to be careful.
Otherwise, you end up in the cell. Do you want to end up in the cell?
No, no one wants to end up in the cell.
Just, well, D'Onofrio's there, and he can say hi, but it's really creepy, D'Onofrio. So
he's like eating people in that. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Anyway. He meets his old pal. He's heading to he's taking a vacation with his pal Hot Rod.
Himbo party.
That's right. Meet up with his pal Blur on Velocitron. Who? This guy isn't even trying for a Machida here.
No, all of them sound the same. Honestly, all three of them sound the same.
Kind of, yeah.
It's just young guy voice. It's himbo voice. Yeah. All of them have himbo voice.
It's fine for Hot Rod. It's not a problem there.
Somebody's like, got okay, maybe nobody is going to go full Micro Machines, but somebody who speaks a little quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. Or at least Blur, can ramp it up a little. Get somebody from Jersey.
Blur or, does I don't ask know. Hot Rod if the flames make him go faster.
That did. I did get a laugh out of that.
Or just speed up the audio of the Blur guy. Just like to 1.25.
All right, like he's a boring podcast or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like I do sort of like Hot Rod and Blur sassing each other about the flames and how fast can you go. It's almost like they're flirting aggressively.
Just their immediate aggressive sexual tension. It's pretty good stuff.
It disappears for the rest of the episode, but it's a good start.
Yes.
I'm there for it.
And unfortunately, also arriving through the Space Bridge Network is a guy who is definitely the zombie bite victim who doesn't tell you that he was bitten by a zombie.
Yeah, who's like evil Wheeljack model. Like, has Wheeljack even shown up in the show yet?
Yes, he has.
Oh, okay.
Remember that episode where they're in the Ark and they're fighting like bugs or something?
Oh, right. Yeah, that's why. There were a bunch of models in that episode. But yeah, he's Not slice colored. He's very Decepticon-y themed. There's a lot of purple going on, and
yeah. So I don't think they ever bring up whether he's like a deliberate Decepticon agent or just an unwitting Typhoid Mary here.
It does sort of feel like more he's just a Typhoid Mary carrying stuff, and he's real nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did feel like the way he's carrying stuff, I was like, is that, you know, where the problem is coming from is the thing he's carrying, but then I remember it's a vacation planet, yeah. So that's probably just, like, his luggage.
Yes.
Yeah, also, like, when he drops one of them and picks it back up, his hands are a little rusty looking.
Uh-huh.
Well, a little dirty looking, which could be rust. But yeah, it kind of feels like he's just a guy running away with sacks of money who happens to have a disease.
Yeah, and this guy does indeed have cosmic rust, which you may remember from the episode of Generation 1 that was apparently intended as like an AIDS metaphor.
Really?
I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see that idea, but I don't think that episode worked that way.
I mean, it's not a great episode.
No.
What, cosmic rust?
I mean, it's an okay episode.
I don't know
that episode because it's like, it's a Perceptor episode, so...
It is a Perceptor episode.
I'm biased because I just enjoy anything that's got that much Perceptor in it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, where is it here?
But they never actually call it Cosmic Rust. It's almost like they're intentionally not calling it Cosmic Rust.
But yeah, I think that one of the, like, who wrote this? This is...
They call it the Plague of Rust.
Yeah, the Plague of Rust. This is a Paul Davids episode. And I vaguely recall that he went to a BotCon and talked about this being about AIDS.
Hmm.
Really? Cosmic Rust?
Yes.
I mean, okay.
Cosmic Rust.
Sure. I mean, I guess they do shun the people who get it.
Exactly.
Okay. Hmm. I guess I can see that.
And this is from, like, 1985, and probably written in, like, 84, so we hadn't quite figured out what the whole deal with AIDS was yet.
Right.
I mean, you know, at no point did they attempt to scrape the cure for AIDS off the Statue of Liberty.
No. Also, that's the episode that begins by talking about a lost, an Autobot colony that was thriving at the dawn of time.
That's right.
Which raises a lot of questions.
Right now I want to go back and rewatch that episode.
That's like at the beginning of the episode, too. Yeah.
Yeah, like right away. Anyways.
I like it. I like that episode, but like I said, I enjoy any episode with that much Perceptor in it.
It's kind of like me with Grapple.
Yeah. That's understandable. He's pretty great, too.
Which R.I.P. to Peter Renaday.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Voice of Grapple and also Splinter and also the robot Lincoln at Disney World.
Oh. Nice.
Like voicing Lincoln was like an ongoing thing for him. Like, I think he shows up on like an episode of Batman, The Brave and the Bold as Lincoln.
Oh, cool.
Aw.
Anyway, so...
We got the actual voice of robot Lincoln for our cartoon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not like he hadn't done cartoons before.
Well, yeah, I know. It's just it's interesting.
And I think he was like an old-school Disney guy. Like, I think he might be in those live-action Kurt Russell movies in the 60s.
Oh, wow.
Which, incidentally, of course, also have Frank Welker.
Yes.
Yeah.
Live-action Frank Welker. He's like Kurt Russell's buddy.
Some of the rare glimpses of live-action. He's not even a bad-looking guy.
No.
Is that what in like what the computer wore tennis shoes?
Yeah, like Computer wore tennis shoes and The Strongest Man in the World, that sort of thing. What if there's like an alternate universe where he has Kurt Russell's career and Frank Welker was Snake Plissken and is also married to Goldie Hawn somehow? Anyway. So back in reality. Windblade is, we're still on this ship, and this time the Seekers have found it. We've got two new members of the Seeker fleet here. We got Thrust, who does not have a cone head.
What? He's supposed to have a cone head.
There was a Thrust in this episode? What?
Yeah, it's Thrust and Acid Storm.
Oh, right, because we just see him in jet form. Okay. It's Thrust?
Yes. Yeah.
Huh.
And, of course, Acid Storm, a famously confusing character on this series, because they sometimes they use the female Seeker character model, sometimes they use the male one.
Yeah.
and voiced by a woman.
Well, this, we just see the alt mode only.
Just in the jet mode. I'm not even sure they have any lines.
No, she does. She has a line.
I wasn't sure which one of the two of them that was speaking that line, so...
Mm. Or, well, is Thrust also female?
No, Thrust is just... Thrust, I believe, is just a guy.
Okay, then it was Acid Storm because it was another female voice besides Slipstream.
Okay. Right,
because Slipstream also turns up.
Yes.
And yeah, Thrust voiced by a guy, dude named Tomas.
Okay.
Tomas Vergadula.
Oh, that's a neat name. Oh, Tomas without an H.
Anyway, so I guess because of the production's, let's say, lack of eye to detail, Storm would use two different character models, and then they just decided behind the scenes that the character is just gender fluid, which is, you know, important representation, but I would prefer if it had been planned ahead and not just because...
Yeah, because of animation errors.
These guys can't tell one character model from another.
We've done more things because of animation errors. I'm fine. It would have been nice if it was planned, but I like it.
Shout out to the female-voiced, gender-fluid people, but yeah, it would be nice if they did that on purpose.
Yes. And so, you know, she's flying around trying to fight these guys. Slipstream is also there. And we cut back to the past of Velocitron. They're racing around, but then eventually they come to a portion that is closed off that, of course, Blur knew about, but Hot Rod and B do not.
Hmm.
And so Hot Rod is not thrilled.
But, like, Blur also, like, has to quickly stop there. It's like, he doesn't pull up, like, knowing it's there. It feels weirdly smug. This, like, oh, yeah, I knew that was there. It feels like bluffing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when Blur is getting Hot Rod's name wrong, he calls him Hot Shot. And also Hot Dog.
Man, that is the next crossovers toy I want. Transformers X Oscar Mayer, where it's a guy who turns into a Wienermobile.
That would be good.
It would make about as much sense as the Stranger Things one. So
yeah,
I just can't think of and I would want the robot mode to resemble the Tim Robinson guy in a hot dog costume from I Think You Should Leave.
Yes.
Yes, but no. It should have more standard robot mode, but also be able to do the hot dog costume version. Like that's the Gerwalker version. Like he's mostly hot dogs.
The in between.
Listen, we're all trying to figure out the guy who did this. Anyway, so before any more racing can ensue, a maintenance drone that is badly rusted crashes into the track. They have to evade it, and pretty soon the cosmic rust in the Generation 1 was pretty slow. Like you could build a whole episode on people having it.
Yeah,
and you know, dealing with infection and trying to find a cure and whatever, whereas this is like Ebola. You get it and then immediately die.
Yeah.
You get it and
you are fucked. Sorry.
Fast-moving ground effect thing. Like, it seems...
It's like Ice Nine.
It seems to move slower in Cybertronians than it does in inanimate ground objects.
Yes.
Like, that guy walks through the space bridge and has time to go somewhere before it devours him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when the shuttle, shuttle drone thingy, like, it's rusty, but it crashes into the ground, and the ground just immediately starts to rust.
Also, I can't remember if the cosmic rust actually, I don't know if it affected non-living metal.
I don't think it did, because we didn't see, like, the ship rusting or anything.
Right. So there was, like, a distinction, but then also they just picked it up from some... I forget where... Man, I should remember.
It's a lightning bug weapon?
Well, they've got... The problem with the lightning bug weapon is that the radiation it emits makes the cosmic rust spread faster.
Oh, okay.
So then Megatron has this whole conflict between wanting to use the super weapon and the super weapon killing him. Also, Perceptor is there, and he's the best. He's so good.
Hmm. Anyway, so yeah, this is quickly like spreading over the entire planet, killing everybody. Like, we see a couple guys wandering around as basically zombies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because like Blur wants to run back to, he has a hideout somewhere, which is just a garage, which I guess is far enough away from the rust that it seems fine. But then, yes, a decomposing rusty guy rips into there. It just dies in the corner, and then the entire building
says red rust.
Yes, red rust. Like, almost says red rum.
Yes.
Red rust.
Well, that's basically, I assume that's the reference, yes?
Yes.
But yeah, he just collapses, and then the entire hideout just starts to dissolve.
Mm-hmm.
They don't call it cosmic rust, though. They consistently refer to it as, it's like
the plague.
Plague what? Rust, or the rust plague.
The plague, yeah, would they have to pay Paul Davis royalties or something?
Yeah.
Because cosmic like rust really is noticeable. A cooler name.
Yeah. I don't know what was going on with that.
Yeah. Anyway, so, they're running away, we also get a bit of, we cut back and forth between Windblade and the Seekers here, and it's okay. It's fine. There's it's a totally okay action scene, but these are just kind of more generic-y Seekers that aren't really given any kind of personality.
Yeah, they're just there. They're henchmen.
Well, Slipstream there, but yeah,
they're
nothing.
They're hench folks.
Yes.
Really? Well, okay, Slipstream does sort of get the moment of trying to crack the glass on the cockpit. Yes. But it's A-plot being annoyed by B-plot.
Yes. So we cut back to Velocitron. This hideout is boned, so they have to get to the space bridge to abandon the planet, which is now doomed. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, Blur has indeed been infected. So... because they know that if they...
He wasn't as fast as he thought.
No. Yeah. Because they knew that... and because it's so dangerous, they're going to have somebody shut down the space bridge. And for whatever reason, they have to shut it down from that side. Even though you'd think you'd be able to shut it down from both sides.
Well, I feel like you would really want to be able to shut it down for both sides. I mean, yes. That seems like a concern.
I think maybe the idea, although they don't explain it, is that, oh, I'm shutting it down permanently so it can't be turned on again.
Mm. Well, I mean, I don't
because
think that
planet is too fucked.
But the thing is, that's not going to be a problem for long, because it's also going to be consumed by this rust.
Yes, but also the problem is, spoiler, Blur disintegrates into a pile of rust dust and just blows away.
Like
before Bumblebee actually goes into the portal.
Yes.
So, it's not like Blur was turning it off after Bumblebee went through the portal.
No.
But he is. It's weird. Like, admittedly, Blur had to stay there because he's infected. Yes. He is
it's
a smart
important.
Zombie infected person.
It's important for this episode somehow, despite it not being important for the tone of this episode, because the tone of this episode doesn't know what it's doing.
No.
It just feels like bad direction, despite the fact, like, oh, when we see Blur infected by the rust, like, it's subtle but noticeable. But that he dissolves before Bumblebee goes through the portal confuses me. It's dumb.
Well, you see, Bumblebee needed to see his friend die.
He could have been, like, stepping into the portal. He had to turn around and walk.
Important for Bumblebee's trauma. he sees his friend die. Except the trauma does not seem to actually affect him at all.
No, because it cuts to credits.
Yeah, well, we get a resolution to the Seeker plot where she goes into space, and Slipstream can't follow her into space because she's just a jet and not a space jet. And then, Bumblebee wakes up and he's like, whoa, well, that just happened.
And there's cheery little dun-dun-dun at the end.
And then the episode is over. It's insane.
Yeah, it's like the Megatron episode, this should have been...
Thousands, possibly millions of people just died in instants.
More. It, like...
this whole planet. This whole Bumblebee... goes, he relives this memory of this time that he saw this entire world wiped out, including his friend, and then he's like, whoa, that was weird.
Yeah.
Like, just, it doesn't, it has the story that is an interesting story, but the way that it's told is just completely unhinged.
Yes.
Yeah. Just,
it doesn't know what it's feeling. I don't know. It's not good. It's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Just there's that little musical bit when they do that. What both of them say at the same time in a split screen is, I'm glad that's over.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yes, yes.
Okay, but all of those people
died. Yeah, my mind actually sort of blanked out that, well, glad that's over line, because it feels so wrong after Blur dissolving. And
it probably, like, you know,
dying,
in...
what?
In Transformers the movie, when Optimus Prime dies, they don't just have a dun-dun.
Yeah.
Just the story doesn't know what it's doing with itself.
Mm.
What the hell?
Yeah,
what
like
the hell?
This should have been an episode where there was just some shenanigans on Velocitron.
The tone is just like, completely unhinged.
Like a normal race thing, but for some reason, like, it has, like, Windblade being chased by the Seekers, Bumblebee going to a vacation race, and the plague destroying an entire world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You cram too many ideas into a 10-minute chunk, and it doesn't work other than confuse. It's like, why? Blur shows up for one episode and is dead.
Too many, like,
and it doesn't
feelings.
Mean anything.
Like, things you need to sit with and process.
And this never comes up again.
No. No, it never comes up again.
Okay, we're never seeing Blur again. What the fuck?
Nope. Well, he's extremely dead.
I mean, he's definitely super
he's
dead.
Done. It's so just, he's dead.
Like, if this was setting up that, oh, the plague is going to come back at the end of the season, or it's get used again next season.
Nope.
But if it's not, why this episode? What lesson could Bumblebee possibly learn from this flashback of someone dying again?
Absolutely nothing.
He just completely does not process anything that just this extremely traumatic event that he just remembered.
I know.
No processing at all. He's not okay. He's just like a broken person. He's not okay.
Yeah, after this episode, it should basically be, I don't want to go back into any of my memories ever again, because holy crap.
Yes. Nope, we are not acknowledging any of this. The end.
All right, on to the next one. After this one, we'll never be talked of again.
Yes.
It's time for Shadow Striker.
Yay!
Not to be confused with Shadow Strikers, the one-episode cartoon based on a toy line about where the gimmick was that the parts of the vehicles were transparent.
Ooh. Huh? I mean, I do like transparent things.
This is from, like, 91 or so. It's very much, like, kind of a last vestige of, like, your mask-type cartoons. Friend of the show, Monzo, uploaded the whole first episode, or the whole one episode to YouTube.
Oh, cool. Wait, was that one of those shows that was, like, supposed to be, like, almost a sequel to Mask, but not really?
I don't think it's as much of a sequel to Mask as Vortech is.
Oh, that was the one. Okay.
Yeah, no, this one, it does have a villain whose whole deal is that he's always doing celebrity impressions.
That's extremely 90s.
Yeah.
That's ahead of its 80s, time there.
But
well, I guess it is more 90s.
I don't know. You had
but...
more... I feel like you had more, like, silly gimmicky...
Yeah.
Silly gimmick. I feel like villains in the 80s were trying harder. Whereas in the 90s was when you got, like, Jay Leno Ghost from Big Bad Beetleborgs.
Hey, hey, Mavis, you hear about this? Beetleborgs. But no, we will definitely have to link the, at the very least, the villain introductory scene there, which is terrible, but it's 100%, here are some toys, introduce them in 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I think I do remember seeing at least that scene where it felt like that panel in the G1 comic, the first issue where everyone's spouting off their personality.
Yeah.
In like a panel.
And one guy is indeed doing a bunch of celebrity impressions. That is Chameleon Man. I believe Mons described him as like an evil Scott McNeil. but no, Shadow Striker, which is one word in the title of the show, but apparently two words in the title of the character.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought... Huh. Okay, that would be why... Like, I wrote it down when I started to capitalize Striker, and it's like, wait, no, that feels wrong. I don't know why.
I just hope you finally dealt with that drinking problem.
Oh...
And of course, Shadow Striker has a toy out now.
A very ugly looking toy.
I mean, she has that kind of like weird engine block for a chest, but also it looks like it's crammed with hot dogs.
Yeah, like the hot dog engines. Like the proportions are just like the torso is a block,
well,
and then the legs are just skinny. It's very. I don't like.
It's pulling from the BotCon version. It's a mashup of the BotCon version, which was the original, and the Cyberverse version, and not doing a great job of being either, unfortunately.
Mm. But so this is first aired October 27th, 2018, written by Kate Leth, writer and web cartoonist, last seen doing Whiteout. And we'll be back in a few episodes.
Hmm.
This does kind of feel like, hi, I'm Kate Leth, and this is my OC.
Kind of, but listen, they've been trying for a long time to make a new Decepticon lady stick, and...
Well, like, Shadow Striker, like, was a thing before, like, at least in the toy line, in, Rise of the Fallen, or one of the early movies, like, there was
like a
Shadow
legend
Striker
that was kind of
toy.
Vaguely based on, and that's why they had the name.
But like,
I mean, this
just
try and
like,
give her like a thing.
I mean, to be fair, there was also when we realized back during Transformers Animated that the same guy wrote every episode with Lockdown in it. So
yes,
like it's not like writers don't do that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of Shadow Striker being a rival to Bumblebee was introduced in that Little Legends toy.
Ah, okay.
Like back when they had box text. Talking about the toys. Remember those times?
What? So long ago. I miss those days. I miss those days.
Yes.
Yeah, that was like a recolor wheelie, and it was like cool and evil. It's like red and black. Like red and black wheelie. Yay. New character. Yay.
And thankfully, she will be recurring throughout the entirety of the show.
Yes.
Hmm. Well, she's appeared in one or two episodes before.
Yeah, like the
oh,
back.
Yeah, because she was in the Megatron and one and some.
Yeah, this
that.
Is a big spotlight episode. So, so we're on the this stolen Decepticon ship. Bee and Windblade are kind of sparring, and she's like, you were really good at fighting once. Maybe you should, try and tap into your memories and try and remember.
Maybe
that
you can
be...
remember being back when you didn't suck at fighting. Also, I also want to beat this Bumblebee up, so...
Yes.
She's being very relatable.
So we flash back. Prime has been captured by Shadow Striker and a bunch of Seekers. And so...
Again, back at the Decepticon scummy hideout.
That's right. John Taffer is going to come into this place and yell at them to clean out the grease traps.
Yes.
So Bumblebee has followed them... He you know, he's about to just bust him out, but instead he finds that the room they've kept him in is also where they kept all of their energon, which, of course, is highly explosive.
Yes. In this setting, it is highly explosive.
Yeah, so he's trying to drag him out of there, but instead, you know, Shadowstriker's there, she starts shooting at him, and he's like, you know, what are you doing? You could blow us up. So instead, okay, why don't I just stab you to death instead?
That's fair.
So, stabbing, however, does not ensue. So she indeed decides to just, you know, take her gun out, start shooting, Bumblebee shoots back, hits the energon, and kablooey.
All goes up.
Yeah, because he's walking away while dragging Prime away.
Yes.
Like, he's out of the warehouse full of explosive energon. It just becomes an action movie scene right there.
Yes.
It's like at the end of the movie, he's like,
gotta walk away from the explosion.
Yeah.
It's important.
And of course, like, which anybody who die
should have atomized her, but...
But no, Windblade says that, you know, she did come back. Sort of.
Hmm. Yee.
So we're flashing forward some more. He's fighting a Seeker. Grimlock is there on the radio with his, like, weird... Grimlock's new brain voice.
Hmm. Yeah.
Mid-Atlantic on the radio, Grimlock.
But, because
he's Fraser Crane now. He's hosting his psych program. On the air.
It was just the Fraser Crane. It was just the Fraser Crane show.
Ah, okay.
On KACL Seattle. followed up, of course, by the Gonzo Sports Show with Bob Bulldog Briscoe. Hello, Seattle. I'm listening.
I remember that part. I just forgot that it was how to talk. Anyway.
Hey, baby, I hear those blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Anyway, so yeah, he's in this tanker. It's going to hit Iacon and explode. So he's trying to veer it out of the way, but instead Shadow Striker is there, and she is indeed now like a horrible Frankenstein.
Yeah, she is made of pieces of different robots, which seems like it would be complicated by the whole transformation thing.
Yeah,
well, I guess they all have the same alt modes.
Yeah.
Yeah, just her alt mode just is slightly different colors. But, like, I like that she says that the spare parts used to rebuild her were part of her team, as in the
her
other Seekers.
Guards.
The Seekers that were blew up around.
Yeah.
That's... I like the evilness of that.
Her
yes.
guards. Yeah, it's... I mean... And the same with the previous episode, it feels like there are some really, like, fucked up ideas coming into this show that maybe somebody at Nickelodeon told them to tone down. I don't know.
Or it was on Cartoon Network at this point.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
I mean, in as much as it was on anything.
Yes. I mean, it was on at, like, the coveted 4 o'clock in the morning time slot.
Yes. Mm. Like GoBots now.
Yes.
It feels like they were trying to add some IDW-ness in the background,
yeah.
But like it doesn't work with the rest of the show that seems like it's aimed at babies.
Yeah.
Yeah, like something, you know, you need a little, something more, like even I think Robots in Disguise would handle this a little better, but something along the lines of like a Beast Wars or a Transformers Prime could have kind of got in on this. Or Cyberverse has some unpleasant body horror stuff with a person.
Yeah, it's like super messed
well,
up.
Well, so did Prime.
Yeah.
But
yes, Prime also.
Yeah, this Shadow Striker, this episode does feel like a Robots in Disguise episode.
Yeah, I mean, she is kind of super villainy.
Like, in that it's focused on one weird villain.
Yes.
Like, she's just not animal themed.
Aw, she should be animal themed. She should be, like, panther themed.
Well, she's Frankenstein themed, so she doesn't really need
it. I guess.
It.
She should have, like, a team of, like, monster guys. Like, Night Strike the Vampire guy.
Oh,
and...
yes, actually. Oh, yeah, because, like, she was working with some, like, her monster squad who got blown up, and she's now parts of them.
And then you get to Steeljaw, who's the wolf man.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is.
I don't know, maybe get, like, a mummy guy. I don't know.
This sounds like a great...
You don't need a robot mummy.
Okay, maybe like an invisible man, or...
Well, you just have
Mirage.
A Mirage knockoff.
You just have Mirage.
You already got one of those.
This is good. I would like to see a Transformers Monster Squad.
Hmm.
I mean, we do have those crossovers toys, which I really do like.
Yes.
Yes.
I have them on my desk next to me.
Draculus and Frankentron. Hopefully we're getting a Wolfman or a...
Give me a Gillman.
Yeah, or a Gillman. I would appreciate a Gillman. I don't know if they could do, like, a female Transformer who has, like, a head that big, but I'd appreciate a Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah, you'd have to find an odd
You'd really need
mold.
Some space for the big beehive, but you couldn't do it without the beehive. Anyway. So, you know, so she's, you know, she can't, you know, knife fight the way that she used to because she's a horrible, malfunctioning Frankenstein. So, her only mission now is just to kill Bumblebee.
I mean, I feel like as nemesis go, Bumblebee is kind of like, that's kind of sad. I feel like you're not quite beating up on a child, but it definitely feels beating up on a child adjacent.
Especially this Bumblebee, yes.
Well, yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, if you're like animated Bumblebee. Well, animated Bumblebee did have a nemesis, and that worked because animated Bumblebee was kind of a dick.
Yes.
Yeah,
He's like the most asshole-ish of all Bumblebees.
But this is like being an adult Power Pack villain.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is... Yeah, that's about right.
It's a little embarrassing, and quite frankly, the police should probably check your hard drive.
Yeah. He's not worth it. He's not worth the trouble.
I mean, he's kind of an adult here, but they don't really separate, like, mature, cool guy Bumblebee from his current, you know, man-child goofball stage.
I mean, look at the Cube episode. That was him in the... That was him before he got literal brain damage, and he was still a dumbass.
Anyway, so he's actually kind of thinking of, like, mercy killing her here,
I think.
Yeah, because he managed to get out somehow from underneath the rubble that covered
another explosion, he kind of gets jarred loose. And, yeah, he thinks of, like, mercy killing her here, which doesn't happen. Instead, he just lets her escape. But instead, of course, she turns on him, but then gets shot by Grimlock and just runs away to seek vengeance on him again.
Some other time.
Everyone asks, you let her go? You let her go? Why? Like, letting her live, yes, fine. You're an Autobot. That's good. She caused a ship to crash and almost destroy Iacon City. At least arrest her?
Maybe they don't have proper facilities for dealing with arrests right now.
Yes. I do not like the fact that I'm encouraging Bumblebee to be a cop. However,
you don't like that you're supporting the carceral state, but...
However, I mean, she tried to blow up a city.
I mean, it's less that, more like a prisoner of war.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, he's not going to send her to the disintegration chambers like he's a GoBot or anything.
Yeah, but letting
man.
Dangerous Frankenstein go to commit more crimes and try to murder you again.
Look, GoBots don't fuck around.
You gotta send her to whatever, like, your equivalent of Arkham Asylum is.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, the Vault.
Great, now I wish this episode had been, like, Wheeljack creates a Frankenstein and it's chasing him to his death.
Ooh.
I mean, like an actual version of the Frankenstein novel.
Oh, well, because for that, check out the Generation 1 episode, Autobot Spike.
Oh my god, that episode, speaking of, like,
yeah,
what
that
the
episode
fuck
leaves
were the
trauma.
Writers doing, what the hell? What the entire hell?
Emotional trauma and body horror. Oh, goody.
What?
Listen, we put our buddy's mind into a robot, and he went violently insane.
Uh-huh. No one could have guessed this. Spike is so wholesome, too.
Yeah.
He's just, I mean, he's just got that, like, 80s cartoon kid character wholesomeness, and god, that episode's so messed up.
Oh, that was a Glut episode, and doesn't involve Dinobots.
Wow. But don't forget, Glut also loves Frankenstein.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess. He had one really good episode, one good horrifying episode in him.
So weird.
I mean,
that
the Dinobot
so
episodes
weird.
Are fun too, but yeah.
So that is it for the episode. We just get a brief cap on this when, you know, B is all like, well, it's important to know when to fight, but also to know when not to fight.
A lesson has been learned.
Yes. And so that is it for us for this week. For Cyberverse, we'll be back with more exciting Cyberversian adventures next time. Until then, we are on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we are on Mastodon, and we have a Patreon.
Yes, we are hosted on iaconunderground.net, where we have a Patreon set up to help with hosting and other expenses. That is patreon.com/iaconunderground. For the month of September, it's my birthday, and Transformers 1 is out, so we are going to be talking about aerial bots and Orion packs, and that time they went back in time to witness the start of the war. So we are going to be watching the Generation 1 episode War Dawn. I think by the time we record it, we'll probably have watched Transformers 1, so we might get a little spoilery, but I can't commit to that at this point, because we haven't recorded it yet.
Yeah, we'll probably at least mention that.
Yeah, so next time we are working on the docs.
Yes, though if you join now for as little as $1 a month, our August episode was the episode of Gem where the misfits are accessories to murder.
That's true.
Attempted murder. Attempted yes. murder.
Really? Attempted murder? Hawaii. Do they give a Nobel Prize for attempted chemistry?
So that was a lot of fun to record, too. I dug one of my old Gem audio cassettes out to play in my old audio cassette player over the speaker, so that was fun. So that is patreon.com/iaconunderground. We really just have the dollar a month or more if you really want to chip in tier, because expenses aren't that high, but they exist. I gotta spend all my actual out-of-pocket money on cat litter, so I need the help. But yes, that is our Patreon.
Alright, so until next time, when, We're grabbing a drink at Mac Adams and listening to all y'all, because it's a sabotage. I'm Rob.
I'm Jen, and I am going to go drink a nice glass of Nightmare Fuel now.
I need to put a Beastie Boys episode song in the next episode and risk us getting copyrighted. Hit
we will get hit so hard.
Listen, I can't stand it, David. I know you planned it. I'm going to set it straight, this Watergate.
I think it's only caused a problem once in the past. I forget what song it even was.
There's that song from The Meg.
Oh, yes!
That I have very strong feelings about.
Oh, the
because it was really hard to find!
Translation of Hey Mickey? To find
because it's... Which
one? It's a good cover.
Wasn't it Hey Mickey in Thai?
Yes!
Well, apparently it's really hard to find because it's heavily copyright policed.
But it's really fun.
Almost got sued by what's her name, Tony Basil, or her Thai equivalent.
Good night.
Good night.